These issues, they're all, they all are or have been tremendously successful debaters, and they're bringing you information from debate institutes in all parts of the nation, reporting on the arguments from the Dartmouth Institute and the Northwestern Institute. We have the one, the only, Leslie Wade. Our next panelist is a Bob with a capital B. She taught at the Emory Institute, at the Wake Forest Institute, and at the Wells Debate Institute at the University of Vermont. It's Shannara Reed. Hey, Colin Double J. He's for the Urban Debate League in Atlanta. Now a debater for the University of Alabama on a debate scholarship. And reporting on the Emory Institute and the World Bank of the University of Vermont, Double J, and Johnny Jester. All right, next finalist and most not least, she's here. She's been back last summer. She's a returner, and she debated for not small. And was smart enough to be an excellent student and didn't need to debate anymore. And she works at the Emory National Debate Institute. It's Yvette Valdez.
The Native Americans Affirmative talk about Native American school children and their academic achievement. The evidence seems to overwhelmingly point to that the Native Americans have the highest dropout rate of any minority group in the country, and that they have the highest level of academic failure. So that's what their affirmative petition is going to talk about. There are three possible affirmatives dealing with Native Americans that came out of Wake. The first is school construction. And that just says that Native Americans have these school buildings that their kids are being taught in that are the most deplorable buildings of any other school in the country. There are problems with water main breaks, the walls, the ceilings, the floors, the bathrooms, everything needs to be rehauled. They estimate that there needs to be like about $6 billion. So the school construction affirmative would just fund that, fund school construction. If I'm speaking too fast, you should be able to understand it since we're all debaters now. All right. Okay, the second affirmative, the Native American Languages Act. What that tries to do is to get Native American languages as part of the curriculum in Native American schools. That's supposed to preserve their culture, and their culture is key to survival of all humans on Earth because they have specialized knowledge about medicines and et cetera, so we can save them, which is what that advantage is. And so that advantage talks about, the other thing that they'll try to claim is probably Native American self-determination. By a lot of Native Americans to utilize their language in schools and in curriculums that prove that their culture is good or whatever, that's key to their self-determination, like their ability to determine what it is best for their tribe, not like the government determining that. They might claim a self-determination advantage. The last affirmative is the foundation's affirmative, which I think is the best one. If you're choosing to write one of the Native American affirmatives, I think this is the best one. The foundation's affirmative, what it does is it allows, it tells the government that they have to allow this foundation to be able to accept private grants. There's a foundation that's already in existence that attempts to help academic achievement, but the federal government has said that you can't accept outside grant money, like from corporations or places like that. They can't accept that type of money. They don't really have any money to fund the programs they would like to in school. So what that does is just says that the federal government has to allow them to fund, you know, with whoever wants to fund the grant, right? Here's what it claims they'll solve. They'll solve school construction, which is the first thing we talked about, right? They think they'll be able to generate enough money to fix the buildings in the schools. The second thing they'll also claim is that the Native American Languages Act, which supposedly is supposed to be passed by Congress, they'll do that too as a part of the program for the foundation. So they'll have like language curriculum, that type of thing in the program. They also say that they'll have anything else that the tribe feels necessary for their educational system. So if there's a tribe that says like, look, we need special funding for this program because that meets the needs of the people in our system or whatever, then the foundation would allocate a certain amount of money to send to that tribe so that they would have better education in their tribe. Okay, does that make sense? Like, it just really gives the tribes a lot of ability to be innovative for their education system. The things they'll claim are the same things as the other two affirmatives. They'll claim that Native Americans have the highest dropout rate, whatever, that equals poverty. We need to have added academic achievement to solve poverty. That's a big advantage. But the second thing that they'll claim is this self-determination advantage I talked about before, but this affirmative actually solves that advantage. Okay, and the cards are really good. It talks about why if you give tribes more control over their education, they'll make better decisions. That those types of decisions will be modeled worldwide among other countries that have ethnic minorities, that they will have better self-determination, they'll increase their academic achievement, increase their ability not to be poverty-stricken, all those different types of things, right? So this is the one affirmative I think solves that advantage. The other two I don't think so do as well as that. So that's the suggestion. Thank you for running that affirmative. The cards are in congressional hearings. That's where you can find these cards. There's a lot of debate about Native American education going on in Congress and committee hearings. That's where these affirmative cards are. That's where the 1-8 together is. So check out the congressional hearings for those who are affirmative. Here's the negative argument you can write against them right now. The first is a specific disadvantage called the tribal colleges. It says if we fund things like foundations, it'll trade off with funding for the foundation that funds tribal colleges, like the places where people go out and they graduate from high school, there's a direct funding trade-off. And the evidence says that tribal colleges are more important for academic achievement because it serves as a something to look up to, something to look forward to, and a place for Native Americans who don't have a really high rate of getting into other colleges for them to be able to go to tribal colleges. So that's a specific disadvantage. That. The other thing that I would suggest running is a disadvantage like Clinton with a big impact. The reason I suggest that is because the self-determination signs that you'll read on the advantage against the case are really explaining too. So conceivably in the 2 and 8, you go for the self-determination signs and the disadvantage. Okay, so that's my suggestion for that. The second affirmative that I'm going to talk about outside of Native Americans is media literacy. Anybody heard of media literacy? What that is? Okay, good. You've heard of it. It's a class, right, that teaches you how to interpret the things that go on in the media, like how to critically question what the media says is true. For instance, how do you deal with news broadcasts that say all minorities are either engaged, committing violence, or undereducated? You know, how do you evaluate that in terms of yourself? So there would be classes to talk about things like that, right? How do you interpret all those things? How do you interpret movies where there's a lot of violence going on, right? So people say that the media influences people like you to commit violent crimes, and people are talking about now using like movies as defense when they commit murder. Like there are kids that claim like, you know, look, I watched Natural Born Killers. That's the reason why I killed my parents. Okay, so it's to teach you how to deal with things like that, how to interpret those things. So it's really a class, right? It's a mandatory class, media literacy. They claim to solve violence in schools, they'll read evidence and talk about things like Columbine, you know what I'm saying, how there was, that was an example of how bad the violence can get, et cetera. Here's what I think we should run against that. The only thing that media literacy does is set up this class. So I think you should just counterplay to do it through the states, right? Because the states are closer active to the schools, okay? Counterplay to do it through the states, more federal government should win you the debate. Okay, because there's no reason the federal government should be on yet. Okay, counterplan Clinton could win the debate. All right. The next affirmative is the testing affirmative. Okay, the testing affirmative, what they try to do is to make tests not culturally biased. You know what I'm saying? How there's this big debate about why standardized tests are bad for minority students because they tend to fail them more so than white students, and that it's a cultural problem with the test, et cetera, et cetera. So what they want to do is take these guidelines from this place called the APA. I don't know what that stands for, sorry. But they take these guidelines and they take them to the OCR, which is the Office of Civil Rights. And the Office of Civil Rights enforces these guidelines. Okay, so they are just attempting to solve that problem with the testing for minority students. The last thing is, they'll claim that the problem with schools are that minority students get tracked into lower classes, you know what I'm saying? Like, minority kids get tracked into the dumb classes, the white kids get tracked into the AP classes, et cetera, would be their contention. And what they're going to say is that if we have appropriate testing, then the problem with tracking won't happen. Okay, so here's what I think you should do on a negative. I think you should ban tracking in high schools. band practice, right? It solves the same problem that the testing does, right? Because it means that minorities won't any longer be trapped into these lower classrooms, right? That means that even when there are the teachers who think that the students, while they might have scored higher on the test, they shouldn't be in the class, it's rid of all those problems, right? The solves the evidence for band practice is really good. It says it solves out all the problems of the affirmative plan and it avoided this ad of your choice. Okay, so band practice, counter plan, and this ad of your choice. All right, the last affirmative, no, not the last one. The second to last of religion in schools, that case just has the Supreme Court ban some decision or to reinterpret some decision that would allow us to have religion classes in the high school. They'll claim two advantages. The first is one, that we don't have any morality in our society, that we don't have any values, that we have these type of courses that will teach students how to have more values and morals in society. What you should think about is that advantage assumes that people believe in the religion. Okay, if you read those cards, it assumes that you believe in the religion. That'll be important when I talk about what you should run on the next. The second advantage they'll claim is a tolerance advantage. Just that when we have religious classes, it means that we know more about different types of religions. We tolerate people better. There's some modeling evidence that talks about how we teach other countries to be religiously tolerant, etc. So those are two advantages. Here's what I think you should run against that. The church state gets that. This says that when you have religion in schools as a violation of the separation of church and state, everybody know what amendment that's from. What amendment is that in the Constitution? What amendment? I can't hear you. It's the First Amendment, exactly. It's the First Amendment that, you know, there shouldn't be anything going on between the church and the state, right? And the plan is a direct buttress against that, right? Because it teaches religion in school. So that's a violation of church and state. The link argument that you're gonna get is from the advantage, right? The advantage that they say that we can solve morality in schools, right? We can solve morality amongst the youth because they'll begin to believe in religion. That's your link, right? You're teaching religion in schools. The distinction they're going to attempt to make is that religion, your class isn't attempting to convert anybody. It's just trying to teach religious tolerance. Okay, so that's the link argument. All right, does everybody understand that? Why that's the link? Right, because it's not just about you learning about religion. It's about you believing in that religion. That's why I abolish this church and state. All right, the last affirmative is critical pedagogy. And critical pedagogy. Critical pedagogy. That should be in your Vermont file. For those people who went to Vermont, that was the Vermont affirmative critical pedagogy handout. It's not in the Wake Forest stuff, but since I wrote it, I thought that I could talk about it. All right, so critical pedagogy. The plan that was written at Vermont just says that we would change the entire educational system to be modeled after critical pedagogy, which means that we would change curriculum, we would change like how the school day is set up, like there would be bells ringing to tell you to go to class. That type of thing. It's an extremely wide-scale change of the educational system. Here's what that's for. It's to create critical consciousness in students so that you begin to critically question everything you're taught. For instance, if you're in a history class and they teach you a set amount of history, which is the normal thing, right? The history book is set with a certain amount of history. There's not a lot of diversity in that history, you know what I'm saying? Like women's history. There's some African American history, but it's very little and not at all like an example of really a real African American history, et cetera. So what it would say is that we would have alternative ways of producing knowledge. So we would have like African American history books, women's history books, you know, it would be a critique of the dominant system of history. You know what I'm saying? Like how the history class is already set up, we would expand beyond that. Right? Why is that necessary? Is to teach you how to critically question everything that you're taught and everything that you read and everything that someone presents to you is truth. And they claim that the best way to solve things like racism and sexism and oppression, all those different types of things, is to critically question everything that's taught to us. Because the school system replicates the larger system of hierarchy that exists, like, you know, black versus white, male versus female. They make a value judgment on who's more intelligent. Okay, does that make sense? Males are more intelligent than females, whites are more intelligent than blacks. All that's replicated in the school system, right? So critical pedagogy attempts to solve that. Okay? I vote for critical pedagogy, the best part of this one. But anyway, it's good affirmative. Okay? It's also a good critique. So here's what you should run against critical pedagogy. I think you should run state and Clinton. Here's why. I know if you told you didn't you have personal experience. You can do all of that, but here's another alternative way to debate. You can argue that the best way to try to implement critical pedagogy is on a smaller scale, that the federal government action is too large scale, and that critical pedagogy authors probably wouldn't agree with the federal mandate. You know what I'm saying? They would probably more agree with like smaller scale innovation. So if you ran to do the plan through the states, which is a smaller scale of the plan, right, then that probably just better policy than federal action, which means the counter plan policy is higher to the states, and now you just have to win a link to the dip bag. Okay? Make sense to everybody?
All right, those are all the comments. Okay. Before I start talking to you about this case, I sort of want to start with a caveat that I didn't actually speak at either of these camps, so I don't know what the best negative positions are to run, and I can't give you advice. But if you're interested in any of these cases, please come and find me after this, and I can give you ways to get in touch with me. Find out from my brother and his debate partner who did go to this camp. Okay. The first case that I want to talk to you about is we changed the property taxes and the way that we use property taxes to fund education. Right now, a percentage of property taxes go into public education, you all know this, which means that certain communities have, you know, more resources at their disposal. And the argument is that there are inherent sort of racial and classes things that are that go on there because of the disparities in how much money different schools get, which tends to hurt specific groups of people. So what this plan would do is make funding for schools uniform across the board and not based on property taxes anymore. And the argument is then you get a better quality of education and increase the academic achievement of communities that don't have as much money going into their schools. Okay. The second case would overturn the Hazelwood decision. Okay, overturn the Hazelwood decision. The Supreme Court decided in the Hazelwood case that it was okay for principals to censor school newspapers. And what happens with this plan is they overturn this decision and they claim that they would be able to protect schools' freedom of speech better, which is, you know what amendment, right? The First Amendment. Right on. And there's a bunch of people who say that we have to have freedom of speech to ever truly learn about stuff, so that makes sense. The third case is another Native American case, but it's different than the one Shannara talked about. What this case does, or actually, the administration in charge of schools on tribal lands right now is called the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And they're in charge of those schools right now, and what the plan does is it devolves their jurisdiction to the specific tribes or the specific groups of people in question, saying that they know better what works on their specific, you know, with their specific community. So it allows for more innovation and also preserves the culture better. Okay? This next series of cases was run at the Dartmouth Debate Institute. The first one is called Super Ed Flex. Super Ed Flex. And what this case says is it devolves the power of educational innovation to the state. The idea is the federal government passes huge overarching policies about education, but the state governments are much better at specific and individual innovation, and so giving the states sort of a free license to do what they want without being tied to the federal bureaucracy or the constraints of laws that might apply if they were receiving federal funding will allow them to innovate better and to specifically tailor their schools to the community better. And they claim federalism is an advantage. So not only do they turn the federalism disadvantage, and they basically are the state's counterpoint, they can also claim that as an advantage, the thing is they've solved for that problem. The next case is ban asbestos removal in schools. The reason you do this is some people say that asbestos only gets out and makes people sick or hurts them when it's removed because it gets asbestos into the air and people start breathing it in. So that's particularly a problem in lots of really old schools because they're just getting around to removing the asbestos from. And the idea is that we should ban that because it creates an environment in which people are sick and exposed to unnecessary health risks. The next affirmative is an environmental education program, or establishes an environmental education program. And what this is adding to the curriculum courses about education, or about the environment, and it tries to educate people on ways to more appropriately interact with the environment. And the argument that this case would make, and the thing that it would claim as a disadvantage, should be to solve for environmental degradation, or at least create a situation in which people could innovate about the solution. And the last case that I've heard about is a cultural exchanges case. What this case would do is, I mean, I'm sure you all have at your school, foreign exchange students and things like that, or I'm sure that you've heard of that, or seen it in a movie or something, you know what I mean? That's how I thought about it the first time. So, what this program does is it expands current foreign exchange student programs to allow for larger groups of students from more varied countries to come to high schools in the U.S. And it does this in order that we can learn about the culture of other groups of people.
Two affirmatives. The first one is sexual orientation. The sexual orientation affirmative argues that Title IX, which is the federal section that protects equality in schools, like in schooling and education, it argues that Title IX can be interpreted to protect students of different sexual orientations. And the affirmative would amend Title IX or reinterpret Title IX and extend that protection to students of different sexual orientations. It argues that in the status quo, they're not being protected. And the affirmative would extend that protection through Title IX. They do it through the Supreme Court. They have the Supreme Court reinterpret Title IX through decisions that they handed down. I'm not sure what that decision is. If you find me in the next couple of days, I can tell you what it is and I'll find out. But they reinterpret it through a decision. The negative strategy is against it. The first one is the movement position. There is a movement position that came out of the Vermont Institute. And I think there's a really good story to be told that currently, students of different sexual orientations and just sexual orientation movement, like gay rights movement, are being formulated in the status quo to solve those types of things. And if you do it through the federal government, you undercut those movements. You can also run Clinton, Shannara's favorite position. And there are some excellent case terms in that file that talk about how when you pass gay rights legislation, it causes public backlash or people who are against gay rights get mad, and it only causes more like hate crimes and violence against the homosexual community. The next case is the vouchers affirmative. There are two versions of this affirmative. The first one is the DC vouchers affirmative, which only does vouchers in the District of Columbia. Only DC. Now, the way they claim this is topical is the District of Columbia does not have a state government. It's run through the federal government. So what the affirmative would do is the affirmative would give vouchers through the federal government. Like, it would have to be a federal government policy to give vouchers to food in the District of Columbia. The second version of that is just a national vouchers program. Does everyone understand what the vouchers affirmative does? Because Suna talked about it during his lecture. I don't want to be repetitive. Okay, I'll just talk about it real quick. The vouchers affirmative, okay, for instance, if I had a school, say I were in school, and Shannara also were in school, and my school was just the crappiest school you ever went to in your whole entire life. Like, people were stuck in behind lockers, and there was stuff falling from the ceiling, and Shannara's school was really cool. What you could do is, you could come to me, and I would have to give you a voucher, or you could acquire a voucher that is just like money. And you can go to Shannara school and say, look, I got this voucher, give me an education. And Shannara will take your voucher and you can go to Shannara school. Basically, you can go to any school of choice because it's your money. So then you can, like, go to a private school with your voucher.
They call it strapping money to the back of the kids. It just means that wherever you go, your funding, your public education funding goes with you. So if you choose to go to private school, then you just take that funding to the private school, and instead of the same level as current money spent in public education. So if the private school costs more money, for instance, then you would have to pay the difference. But the money strapped to your back. It's like your individual money for education.
Right. A few arguments against the case. Well, I'll say fine. First of all, there's some good case arguments in the file. Off case arguments, you should talk to our states and federalism. I know that's a generic strategy this year, but it works. And Clinton, or some form of a politics with the case. You can also run. Now, this is kind of a tricky strategy, I think. It's pretty cool. You could also run capitalism. Their main argument will be that the free market solves for education, right? And that the reason why my school would get better is because I would see all of the students with their vouchers walking out of the door, so I would have to do something to fix my school because I want to keep the kids with the vouchers because I want the money. Your story should be that only continues the cycle of people entrenching capitalism. Because you don't get an education for your own personal growth. You get an education to go and be a producer in the larger scheme of things. And that keeps that cycle going. The idea that the free market can solve for all of the education problems.
I think you have to be a little critical.
Yes.
Because I think that their argument about why they solve minority student education, like, you know, they don't just go to the best schools, they don't just go to the better schools, they solve minority academic achievement, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's a simplified notion of how to solve academic achievement for minorities. I don't think they change anything inherent in the school system. So if you run critical pedagogy, my argument would be like, you know, there's a good matching link that they attempt to solve this problem without really changing the system. And so the same problems that are replicated in society, i.e., you know, who's considered smarter will be the same in any school system minority students go to. But the plan tries to attempt to solve those problems and will claim to have solved all of those problems without actually having changed any of the foundation problems that exist, right? So I think that's probably a good matching of all links because they'll definitely claim to have an overarching problem because they take minority kids out of, like, the ghetto and send them to the private schools, the good private schools would be their type of argument.
Right.
I think you could tell a really good story about why. That's just, first of all, it makes an assumption about minorities being able to go to schools in their own communities. You know what I'm saying? Arguments like that, like, I think that you get into a deeper level of understanding what vouchers does, and then you can get some good feeling out of that upon too.
Right. You can also tell the story that they don't change the way education really happens either. So when you take your voucher to a school that's more likely to be a white-dominated school because it's what we call a better school in a better community, then that further marginalizes the student's culture or a minority student's culture because those teachers are more apt to be white, the students are more apt to be white, the surroundings are more apt to be white, and the teaching framework is more apt to be white.
And you get tracked. You know what I'm saying? That's a good argument, too, that if, even if you take the minorities out of their own schools and send them to schools where it's majority white, they'll get tracked into the lower-level classrooms, which is proven statistically true that when African-Americans or Hispanics go to school with white people, that they get tracked into the lower courses. So all of those are the type of arguments that you can make for reasons why the plan doesn't change the system, so the plan can never solve in that system.
Additional argument, last argument that you can make, is you can make the argument that if students start to leave inner city schools, the school funding for that school decreases because of the decrease in enrollment. So you can make the argument that the plan really doesn't solve, because the way that schools get their funding is predicated on how many students they have attending that school. So if all the students are packing up and shipping out, the plan doesn't get any funding, or the school doesn't get any funding.